everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Dawn Keatley.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
Today we're talking evil children. Evil children have ebbed and flowed in horror, and they seem to be having a moment in the 2010s. Today we're going to focus on two films, The Prodigy, a 2019 film directed by Nicholas McCarthy, and Eli, also from 2019, directed by Kieran Boyd. So stay tuned. Now, I just want to remind people that we are not a spoiler-free podcast. Both of these films have major twists, and we will be dissecting them. So if you haven't seen either The Prodigy or Eli, you may want to check them out and then come back. So I guess we'll start by just giving a couple of plot summaries. The Prodigy begins with a serial killer. We find out later his name is Edward Skarka, who was killed by the police at the exact same time a baby is born to the Blooms, Sarah and John. Miles, as he grows up, is stunningly precocious, a prodigy. But it's not too long before we sense things are just a little bit off. Actually, this film isn't terribly subtle because by 22 minutes in, Miles is bashing in a young classmate's head with a wrench.
Yes.
After they've exhausted traditional psychiatry, the Blooms take Miles to, of course, a reincarnation expert. And soon we know why he's precocious and why he likes paprika. He's an adult Hungarian psychopath. The Blooms are increasingly terrified and finally plan to send Miles away, but he's not having any of it. The same year Eli came out, and this film seems quite different. Eli isn't evil at all. He's helpless, very sick, allergic to the world, and he can't leave either his hazmat suit or his plastic bubble. His parents take him to a doctor, too, Dr. Horn, played by the great Lily Taylor. Only Dr. Horn isn't interested in psychiatry. She subjects Eli to very invasive physical treatments to try to cure him of his rare genetic disease in some scenes that really reminded me of the infamous medical scenes in The Exorcist. Eli doesn't respond well to the treatment, and he starts seeing ghosts. But just like we learned early on with Miles, so we learn much later with Eli. He is not what he seems. So what did you all think of The Prodigy and Eli?
So I feel that they're both good films and they both have some decent, you know, plot twists. However, when I watched Prodigy, all I could think of is the movie Shocker. I was like, it really reminded me of the same exact thing. And it kind of had little, you know, tastes of Fallen, the one that has Denzel in it. But I just couldn't get past that.
What happens in Shocker? Because I haven't seen that.
So it was a serial killer or something like that. He was in prison and he gets the electric chair. And I believe it was like the same exact thing that as he's dying,
his soul is
transferred. Okay. His soul is transferred into somebody else.
That is the same plot.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
And that was kind of similar, like with Fallen. You just had this one soul that just kind of jumped from person to person to person. But I mean, Prodigy still had a different twist on it. And they put the evil soul into a child.
Is that the first time you know of a film that has done that?
In a child?
Yeah, like the serial killer.
That I can think of outside of like a devil or a demon or something like that. Yeah. Dramatic pause because I'm now sitting here like racking my brain.
What was the one about the girl that turned out to be a 30-year-old woman?
Oh, that was the orphan.
Orphan. Yeah.
But she wasn't a serial killer.
She was, well, I guess theoretically she's a serial killer herself, but she was just masquerading as a child, which is interesting in itself. That was a good film. I loved that one.
I guess that's different from being a reincarnated serial killer.
Yeah. Definitely. And I didn't realize that. Which one was made by the director of Sinister? Was that Eli?
Eli, yeah.
But overall, I think both were good films. I mean,
Eli. Which one did you like better?
Probably Eli. Mm-hmm. Probably Eli. I think that they kind of had you on the edge a little bit more. Not necessarily scared, but kind of like wondering what the twist was going to be. Yeah. And I think that that's what I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And then, just when it gets to the point when you know it's about to be revealed, you kind of think it's going to be one thing. And then you're like, So I enjoyed that.
So I was watching Prodigy and I was about 40 minutes in and I'm watching it and I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, this is not the movie I'm supposed to be watching because I watching. There's a movie called The Prodigy from 2017 that talks about a girl who has telekinetic powers. And it's actually a pretty good movie. So I was sad to have to turn that movie off and go to this movie, which I enjoyed far, far less.
No idea. There was a...
Neither did I.
There was another Prodigy.
Neither did I.
There was like three. Yeah. I think there was three when I looked at the Fire Stick.
Yeah.
That all had, you know, children on them.
Well, I had less to choose from because I was not on the Fire Stick. I was on, I believe, Netflix. But, I mean, it's a decent movie. The cinematography was decent. The acting was decent. But I really was sort of bummed out that they took the onus of the evil outside of the child, right? So you're not getting like the good son or the bad seed where the child is just evil. Instead, you have this weird hybrid possession,
not
reincarnation.
They made it very clear it's not possession, it's reincarnation.
But I would push back on that though, because I feel like there's a blending of the two happening there. And I hate movies that have what I feel like are just throwaway scenes of like animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds very hypocritical and it probably is since I have no problem watching humans get slashed up. But
that's right.
The Miles dog scene bothered me.
Inexplicably kills the dog.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Yeah.
Right? Was there a reason?
Just to show he's evil, I guess, or possessed or inhabited, whatever word we go with. So, I mean, Prodigy was fine. I did like Eli, and I liked the twist in Eli, because honestly, I didn't see it coming.
I did not see it coming.
Not at all. Yeah. So,
I mean, I think an important thing that Liz had said was talking about how the evil is taken away from the
children.
The child. Yeah, and I think that that's the one thing that I wanted to kind of touch on in both of the films, too, because you're right. I think
in
that
both of them,
when you hit the 2010s again, that's when it went back to the only way a child could be evil is if it's something else. They're possessed.
Yeah.
They're reincarnated. They have horrible parents, so on and so forth. Although it was interesting still, like in Prodigy, well, Prodigy, I would beg to say that his mom is kind of a crappy parent because some of the decisions she makes.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan. So I feel like sometimes that one might be one of those environmental determinism to kind of, you know, she made him into a monster on top of it, or she kind of opened that door by being the type of person she is and allowing, you know, and maybe that's how that spirit picked him of all spirits, even though it, you know, just because he was born at that time. I don't know.
See, I'm interested in that. Why do you think she was a bad mother? Because I didn't really get that. I mean, she was overly involved, but I didn't think she was necessarily a
bad mother.
I think
she was a little bit dumb, and she was a bad person. At the end.
Right.
But not necessarily a bad mother.
I'll give you that.
But I thought you were right the first. Like, I think you're trying hard to give this movie maybe a little bit more credit than it deserves. Because I don't think it does connect Miles's badness to anything other than this Hungarian serial killer that's living inside of him.
Yeah. Which, not for nothing, the one thing that I did really enjoy about the movie was this line, "I'll cut your eyes out and watch you die, whore." I mean, if you're not going to say that to people on the daily, I don't know.
I'm sure I've said that to my mother at some point.
I just love that line.
Well,
I did write that down.
I know she's said it to her mother. Which, happy almost birthday, to my grandmother.
But speaking of mothers, though, I did think it was interesting how the Prodigy ends versus Eli and what position it leaves the mother in. I think that's worth talking about for sure.
Well, the ending of the Prodigy, which was obviously a twist. At the end of the film, Miles's mother has realized wholly that Miles is this reincarnated serial killer. And so she, of course, to kill him.
But she starts by going after the victim who lived.
Yes.
Of the serial
killer.
That
was when I lost it totally.
Not
I was
okay.
Like, yeah, no, that is not
I
okay.
I don't know. Terrible parenting.
I don't know.
I guess you could make the Sixth Sense argument that she would do anything at any cost for her child.
Well, that's what the film's saying. I will do anything at whatever cost to anybody for my child.
She's a cuckoo bird. I can't. Like, that scene made me so angry.
I kind of understand why she would do it.
You do?
I do. Because I'm thinking, like, you know, if I don't personally have children, but, you know, if one of my cousins, who I've, you know, been with since they were babies, were possessed
by a Hungarian
serial killer. I could see where that instinct comes from.
Yeah.
I really could. So yeah. I didn't write her off just for that. Do I? I mean, obviously, that's not the decision anyone should make. And ethically, you both are right.
I don't I'm just have saying a strong emotionally. Moral compass.
Yes, you do.
And
yes,
and I'm having a problem with this.
I mean, I think I might, as someone who does have kids, I might actually do it. And it's the decision, more famously, that Naomi Watts makes at the end of The Ring, right? Though it's less direct.
Yeah.
Like, she passes on the videotape and dooms somebody else to save her son. It was just, this movie made it very clear, and maybe this was a good thing about the movie, like, the costs of what parents will do for their children.
Yeah.
Because that survivor, I mean, she survived the serial killer. She was brutalized. She was traumatized. And then Miles's mother pretends herself to be a battered, mm-hmm. you know, an abused woman to get in the door. I mean, it's
super uncomfortable.
There's so many levels to that. First of all, it's just about how a lot of times how women will victimize women.
That's true.
And I think that it's also how clueless parents can be or how blind they can be to who and what their children actually are.
Yeah.
And this is what continues to perpetuate generations of shitty ass people. Like, there's really no other way to put that. And
But it's like the lifeboat analogy that you always hear in ethics classes, right? Like, who do you save? And if you know only one can be saved, instinctually...
Yeah. I'm not saving my kid if he's a serial killer.
You but might.
She
because it will save the kid and take the serial killer.
Yeah.
Or remove the serial killer.
She was clueless to that, though. She was
But that
blind.
Was her thought process.
She was blind.
Well, I don't think it would have worked either, but she did have a rational... That was her rationality for going in.
It also shows she can't recognize her own kid.
Yeah, because he's gone.
Yeah, like he's been gone.
The serial killer says, you know, he's, you know, Miles has been gone
all this
for
time.
At least half of the film, right? And his mother never knew. I mean, that is true. That proves your point.
Yeah.
She's blind.
Like, she doesn't know her own kid.
Yeah.
She's blind and she's just hoping and a wishing. But again, you don't go out and find somebody that has lived through such horrific things and slaughter them for no.
But that's what I liked about the movie is that the camera really does sort of linger on her injuries and it really makes you understand what she has endured.
Yeah, it does.
And then asks you, okay, now what would you do?
Yeah.
And I liked that complexity. And I think everyone will have a different answer. And I think that's fine. But it was uncomfortable to realize, okay, now I'm identifying with the mother in this scene, even though what I know she's about to do is reprehensible and there's no excuse for it on any level. I can still understand the instinct to do it.
I wanted to punch her in the throat.
Well, I think you can have both of those feelings, though.
Yeah. I just...
That you can be disgusted by it, but also kind of understand where it's coming from.
She is doing it.
For me, I think it's about the greater good. And I'm not usually one of those fluffy, you know, kind-hearted people that thinks like that. But I just, sometimes you just got to take the trash out. And you know what? It's funny because it brings me back to, so after watching this and Eli, I just started watching some of the other films that I was, you know, watching for my paper. And I went back and watched Case 39. And
that's a good
movie. Case 39, they really make this distinct point. And there's a quote I don't remember it, of course, because my brain is not that good. but in Case 39, they're talking about how, you know, a lot of people have a diagnosis and, you know, people have this and people have that and not necessarily just, you know, mental health. And the one person says, you know what? I remember kind of in the good old days when sometimes people were just bad.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to explain it away. You just understood they're bad.
Yep.
Guess what? The kid in Prodigy, bad. Once he was reincarnated
or whatever
you want to call him, bad.
But he wasn't. I mean, to go back to your point, he's not a bad kid. He's an adult serial killer. And that is, even though I didn't realize all of this till we started talking about it, I think we've hit on something that's complex about the film. It's simple in that it won't explore childhood evil. Unlike The Bad Seed, which I totally think this film is completely reprising The Bad Seed, I think. Even down to the fact that in The Bad Seed, the mother tries to kill Rhoda.
Mm-hmm.
But she ends up dead instead. And so Rhoda ends up with her daddy, who doesn't realize how evil she is. So we have to go through the whole thing again.
He has this blind allegiance to the inherent to innocence of children.
But in The Bad Seed, Rhoda is just evil, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no explanation for her other than she is a psychopathic child.
Yeah.
It happens, too, in The Good Son, doesn't it? The mother makes the choice between the quote-unquote good child versus her bad child.
Yeah. In fact, her child is the bad one, right? Mm-hmm. She saves
her nephew, I think.
I think it's the nephew.
And lets her son plummet.
Yeah. So I wonder what accounts for that shift, because a lot of those movies also coincided with, like, the quote-unquote family values era. And yet we see parents killing their kids because they realize the threat. So maybe that is speaking to your point of saying we're going to value the community over the individual.
Yeah.
Whereas I think now you're seeing I'm going to value the individual, which does track with how overly involved parents are culturally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like college admissions scandal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, maybe these films are channeling that, like the mothers in particular. And there's a huge difference between the mothers and the fathers in both of these films that I think is interesting. But the mother, and it is the mothers who have been mostly sent off to jail for the college admissions scandal, right? These overly involved mothers who don't see their children for what they are will do anything for them, even when they're not only just evil children, but like evil incarnate, evil serial killers, evil demonic evil. It's like no matter how bad your child is, you're going to do anything for them.
Yeah, no. And so when she took him to the to get help, it was the reincarnation specialist. Mm-hmm. Like that was her first. Oh no, it was the counselor
took her.
I was like, okay, because at some point, like after he killed your dog, did you think maybe you should try getting him some help then too? Like, try again from somebody besides the reincarnation specialist. I mean, I'm just saying, putting that out there.
You know, Rhoda kills a dog, too.
Yeah.
Doesn't she? I think she throws it out the window or something. It's less graphic than this dog death.
Which makes sense because dogs, you know, in their position and families.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this film is getting more and more interesting as we talk about it. Yeah. But there were a couple of moments when I was like, the plot is moving forward based on some improbabilities.
Definitely.
Like, honestly, if a child, because at first, you know, Miles is in this special school. I mean, honestly, if a kid just out of nowhere clubs another child to,
with a wrench.
Someone's going to have questions.
Yeah. Somewhere. He wasn't in, like, you know, the inner city school or nothing like that. He was in a hoity-toity school. You know, one of them uppity folks would have, he would not still be in that class. Yeah.
And then what, the reincarnation specialist, when he's trying to hypnotize Miles and Miles threatens to, you know, Miles is like, I'm going to tell everyone you were propositioning him or something.
Yeah.
I was like, wouldn't he have had a video on, like, recording this session or something?
I would think, especially with children. Normally,
with
you
children,
do.
Yeah. Or you have some other witness or someone present. And then when his mom is going off to kill the serial killer's survivor, she leaves the book and all of the drawings on the front seat so her child can see it.
Well, I don't think any of us would argue she was a smart woman.
Yeah.
And then, too, like, so I want to kind of, like, get back to that part. And then when she does finally start to decide, okay, maybe I have to handle my son.
Yeah.
She gets mowed down.
Yeah.
So then
yeah.
again, you know, can't hurt your kids.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, without even asking, though, I mean, I would probably do it too. The man in the field just shoots the mother dead.
Yeah. Because she looks like the threat.
Yeah. Well, she has a gun on her son, right? I guess that makes sense.
It does. I just think about, like, what message that kind of puts out as the ending, you know? Yeah. And then he goes off into
There's also the visual of the boy child going into the arms of the older man while the woman is on the ground dead. And the threat, the supposed threat that she represents.
And then, interestingly, he ends up in the home of the psychiatrist.
Right.
So what does that say, too, about the role of psychiatry? Because there's a prominent role of psychiatry in all these kids' films. I mean, from, you know, what, 90s forward at least. And they're all pretty ineffective. Because I was even thinking about Case 39. Like, she, like, reads the psychiatrist. Like, she sits down and, you know, she's having a session with him. And he's supposedly there to just meet her and help her. All of a sudden, her whole entire demeanor changes. And she just looks at him and she's like, you're facile. And right. he goes, do you even know what that means? And she just rips into him and kind of makes him look 6 inches tall. And then the kind of session's over and he walks out and he says, I've never felt so threatened before in my life. And that kind of seems to be the role that psychiatry plays. So I don't know what they're saying about it as a whole.
I've always sort of felt like the psychiatrist fills that position of making it clear that sometimes evil just exists yeah. without any yeah. reason or yeah. any sort of scientific yeah. basis, yes. that some people are just evil. And yeah. in this case, it would be the serial killer who's evil because that's who's being projected back yeah. at the psychiatrist, yeah. not the child.
Not the child.
And I do like that because I don't love when films just, you know, they demonize people that have mental health diagnoses.
Right.
Because you do see that a lot. Like, what was that in Lights Out that you saw that? And I think in some of the M. Night Shyamalan films, like what, The Visit.
Oh,
you
definitely.
Would see that. And Split, it makes it, yeah. It makes it look really, really, really bad. But it just.
Mm. Well, horror films in general tend to be really ableist when you yeah. think about it.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, is that like the new authority figure that's ineffective? Because if you think about previous, it would be military,
right.
police,
and now yeah. psychiatry, which would make sense because the rate of diagnoses has gone up.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that there's a higher occurrence, but just a more occurrence of diagnosis in the last how many years. But I don't know. Food for thought.
But I like your point about the fact that, well, Liz, what you were saying, I hadn't really thought of this either, that the psychiatrists are there. Well, they're there for both reasons. I mean, like you said, Gwen, the psychiatrists seem to be there to show that psychiatry is failing, maybe because of the kind of escalation of mental disease or whatever, mental disorders. But then the psychiatrists are also there to show that really what's going on with this kid isn't psychological at all. They're just evil. It's like Michael yeah. Myers in Halloween, mm-hmm. where, you know, his psychiatrist is like, it's evil, you know, and there's no effort to psychologize. Okay, cut that out. Psychiatrize.
And I think people do want to have a little bit more understanding of their killers anymore in movies too. So that probably plays another role too, as like a storytelling,
yeah,
you know, narrative. We like the backstory.
So many movies have some scene like that with a psychiatrist or a sleep therapist. Sleep therapists seem to be in horror films a lot
in
recently.
The Ring. Too. It wasn't like a sleep therapist, but remember she was sitting there in the chair in the white room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she's hooked up to the machines yeah. and they're asking her questions.
Yeah. That's another great instance of this, because the psychiatrist is trying to understand her and we think she's understandable. We don't know yet that she's just pure evil.
Yeah.
I was thinking too, like there's that book Laughing and Screaming
yeah.
that I think we've read. They do talk about the bad seed and they specifically talk about Rhoda. Right. Yes. Rhoda yeah. and how she's a product of the nuclear family.
Yeah.
And yeah. that was interesting to me because in just looking at these two families, you do have the traditional nuclear yeah. family, but it's different. The sort of genesis of evil is different. And so I know you do, Gwen, do a lot of research like with family structures. Do you see any difference from like the 1950s and sort of that incarnation of the nuclear family versus the nuclear family today that might account for that difference? Because I couldn't see anything when I was thinking about it.
No, and I'm thinking, you know, because I look more at the films like 90s and forward.
Yeah.
And in many of the cases, from like Good Son to say this, you do have an intact nuclear family
mm-hmm.
who are generally involved. Like, it's not like a Rosemary's Baby where, you know, you have this douchey husband that's, you know, sells off his firstborn so that he can succeed in the world. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like you don't have a parent that overtly did something mm-hmm. horrible. They're both present. They're both loving. I think if anything, maybe sometimes they're like loving to a flaw.
But you do kind of get that in Eli, though.
Yeah.
With the mother, because she makes a conscious decision to have basically the spawn of Satan.
Yeah. We'll be getting
yeah.
to that.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Stay tuned.
stay tuned for that. But I did think it was interesting that in both films we have that intact nuclear family, though I do think we see cracks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Primarily between the husband and the wife. Like in The Prodigy, I was surprised at how quickly Sarah turned to thinking her husband was abusing Miles.
Yeah.
That happens in Joshua, I think, 2007, too.
I mean,
real quick.
If you trust somebody, do you really that quickly switch to like, oh, my husband must be abusing our son?
I mean, I guess it's again, it's that blindness.
Yeah.
You know, and the belief that children are 100% inherently innocent. And then that's a dangerous thing in itself, too, is just believing that kind of mythology.
Yeah.
So I think, like, if you ask any parent, like, what's one of your major fears, that would be, like, somebody abusing your child.
Which is
interesting. And you not knowing.
Because it is safer times now than it was a decade ago, 2 decades ago.
Right, but the media doesn't paint it that way. I mean, even though you're right.
I mean, statistically, it's down. Things are more open now. Like,
I mean,
people are more aware.
More reporting strategies.
I think there is more reporting strategies. But I mean, everybody's monitored to all extent. There's, I don't know, I just, but I think it was interesting kind of on the converse side when you had the incident between the kid from Prodigy and the reincarnation specialist when he was making those threats. Yeah. That's a reality too, is just, I could be alone in a room with a kid and they can make these allegations about me.
Oh, 100%.
I think about that
all the time.
In my field.
Yeah. Like agreed.
That's probably one of the biggest fears that we have. I mean, I work for a nonprofit. Wow. When we have new hires coming in, that's legit the biggest fear that they have. And then with my tenured staff too, that's one of the number one conversations that comes up in discussion in the training environment is just, how do we handle that? Like the number.
Do you have rules about always either getting things on camera or having another person in the room?
We do your best, but then there's areas that can't be covered by cameras. So bathrooms, changing rooms, bedrooms.
Ooh, all the dangerous places.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because where's the first place that a kid goes when they're pissed off? To their room.
Right.
You know? So, and then you have even therapists that are having their clinical sessions in their offices and there's not cameras in every one of those offices. And that's a scary thing. And that just, I think about the level of power that has gone into the hands of like the kids when that happens. And the fear that it's put in adults. And I mean, I'm saying children should always have the ability to speak up. I'm not saying that, but it's definitely become a very threatening tool.
Well, and that is part of the power that Miles gets.
Yeah.
And he knows how to manipulate that.
Well, he realizes the power of the accusation.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's different is...
Can I just tell you, like, as far as the actor goes that played him?
Miles? I felt
bad for his actual
Jackson
mother.
Jackson Robert Scott.
Jackson, I felt bad for your mother.
Why?
Because when he had to recite those words that he had to recite just to make the allegation in that scene, I was like, hell no.
I wondered about that, whether or not that was sort of piped in by, like, a voiceover. Because they've done that in the past. Like, I think with The Exorcist, there were scenes that...
No, he still had to mouth those words.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, I'm just thinking about, like, I don't want my... What is he? I don't know. 10, 11, 12?
No, he's probably 12. And if you're 12, you've heard those words, probably.
But I still don't need my kids saying them out loud.
Okay, my neighborhood, you heard those words.
Staring at some man and saying, like, I'm going to... put your cock in my mouth and I have hair in between my teeth that I found on the toilet. Like, that's kind of graphic.
Thanks for rehashing that.
Yeah. I
didn't even think about that. It would be interesting to look into the production of the film because I bet they didn't have it. It's hard to believe they would have a child saying those words.
Right, but you're right. He did mouth them, though.
Yeah.
So at the very least.
In order to mouth them, he would have to know them. So he might as well them at that point.
Like, I'm having a Beavis and Butthead moment because you guys keep saying mouth it. Like, and when we're talking about this content.
Very professional.
You two are.
I have to say, one of my favorite moments in The Prodigy was pretty early on when the babysitter was playing hide and seek.
That was
so creepy when she had her eyes covered and just opened them and he was standing right there just looking at her. It was like, okay, I'm done with this kid.
Yeah, I would have been like, no thanks. I have to go home sick.
You're on your own, kid.
So we should turn to Eli, which I loved this film. You guys were not glowing enough about this film.
I liked it better than Prodigy.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I mean,
I
that's
liked
definitely
the plot
a
twist.
Consensus. Yeah, did you see the plot twist coming? Because you see it more than
I knew
I
something
do.
Was coming, but I think I thought that he was a ghost.
Oh. I did too.
Yeah.
I thought that was the twist.
Yeah, I did too.
Like.
Because I assumed that the girl outside was.
Was a ghost, yes.
And I thought that it was going
to
be one of those aha moments.
But. And I have to say, for all you Stranger Things fans out there, Sadie Sink has a small role in this as Haley. And she's great. I love her. Love her, love her, love her. All the actors were great in Eli, I thought.
Yeah.
Charlie Shotwell, who played Eli, was really good. I mean, I found the movie for about 45 minutes or so. I found it just really hard to watch because the actor who plays Eli, is very vulnerable and thin and frail. And all the, like, these horrible things are happening to him. He's like beset by ghosts. He undergoes these like ridiculously awful medical procedures that I could not watch. I mean, needles and blood. And I just it was very uncomfortable for me.
I think I don't like it. What's most interesting for me about the film is just kind of the role of evil in it, because you don't really ever get a sense that he's a bad kid.
No.
Literally until that plot until twist happens. Right. It's like when the plot twist
the
happens,
worst.
It's kind of like we find out, so does he, and yeah. then he just gives into his higher power.
Yeah.
Which is
that was interesting. I
and
thought
then
that he made
just
that shift.
Completely becomes bad, but it's like almost as if he would have never found out, if his parents never would have taken him there, would he ever have?
Yeah, because like, he is the child of a demon,
yeah.
of Satan.
Yeah, spawn of devil.
Even, the spawn of the devil.
I've met a few of those.
His mother, and I realize this is why she's called Rose, because it's got to be playing on Rosemary's Baby. His mother chooses
yes.
to have sex with the devil. So it's not like Rosemary's
We've
Baby
all
where
made
she's...
that choice at some point. I'm just saying. Nice.
Yeah, there's a little social commentary there. And you get the sense, like, I think she does it because she wants a child.
Yeah.
Because she says, I was praying. And, you know, then she says, he told me you wouldn't be like him.
And that's not a new thing, because they did that in Blessed.
Yep.
And various, like,
oh, really?
Knockoffs of that, too, where it seems that the woman, like, maybe she just wanted a baby mm-hmm. and, you know, at any cost.
Yeah.
They still at least made a good play on it. Because, like, that part wasn't new, but the rest of it really was. And she played a pretty good parent up until you found out that she did that.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure you guys would say, well, she's a fantastic mom because at any cost, she did whatever she had to give life and blah, 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 blah.
I thought her relationship with her son was a little nauseating. I mean, all of the breathe. I mean, yeah. she's just
a little
on him or something.
Yeah.
Like, breathe, make a wish. And I love the way Eli flips out on her at the end, and he totally infantilizes her. You know, he looks at her and he's like, breathe, breathe, blow out your candles, make a wish, and just makes her realize what she's like, how nauseating that was earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did like that with the mom, because you get the feeling like she has no life outside of her child.
Yeah.
And then in the end, she really has no life outside of her child, and it's no longer her choice.
Yes.
So I thought that was pretty interesting.
So it's saying that women should have a life outside of their children.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, their children are going to turn out horrible.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I mean, at some point, children grow up. And you want them to be able to, you know, be fully actualized adults.
Actually, you know, this really is saying something about over-involved mothers, because the way the narrative, I mean, I guess we realize at some point when the twist happens that Eli is the child of the devil all along, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, he doesn't know it. But it's almost like she creates him,
mm-hmm.
like the mother mm-hmm. creates him by literally putting him in a bubble, by just confining him, isolating him with her. Because even the husband says at some point to Eli, like, I was jealous of your relationship with her.
Yeah.
So you could read the film as, like, because of her clinginess, she kind of creates
Which
Eli
is interesting,
as demonic.
Because you're right, you do start to see that a lot more. Like, around this time period. So, you know, it used to be before, like, either an absent father. Because even in, you know, Bad Seed, you can make the argument that
the father was in the military. Yeah,
I think it was.
Gone,
he was never around. So somebody was always either absent or making poor decisions. But I think you're right. There's a lot more of these overly involved and overly invested parents. Which is interesting, because that almost takes it back to, like, what, a 1950s argument? What was it? Was that Philip Wiley, momism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they would kind of basically, and same thing too, is like, you know, fighting the Cold War. If you over-mom your boys, you're gonna. I mean, the argument would have been
gay.
They'd be gay, they'd
and
be
communist.
Sissies, but yeah, they'd be a communist, which essentially
oh
was,
my God.
AKA evil at the time.
Yeah.
So they would be evil because you over-mom them. Which this is kind of making that same argument.
This kind of is making that same argument.
Yeah. So.
But it's kind of a cool intersection of, like, the nature versus nurture argument, because would this have ultimately played out even if she hadn't been involved?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he is, after all, the spawn of the devil.
Yeah.
Or was it because of her over involvement?
Yeah, because you did get the sense that he was going to just be a good kid until he was like, oh, wait, shit, I'm the devil's son? Oh.
But he hadn't hit puberty yet. And I feel like the function of Haley in the film, because she knows what's coming, and she reads as a little bit older. And so I almost wonder if
she's once drawing him toward puberty and toward embracing his demonic nature.
Right.
That's cool, because they do end up kind of like a couple. I mean, they sort of talk like they're brother and sister, but you kind of get the feeling it's...
Well, I mean, technically they are half brother and sister, but I guess when you're dealing with the devil, those definitions don't really matter.
And it is interesting that they chose to make him so frail.
Oh, yeah.
And then contrast it. But yeah, they really did throw you off at first.
Oh, I was totally reading it as a Sixth Sense kind of film. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you thought he was the ghost, because I definitely got the Sixth Sense vibe, where obviously Bruce Willis was the ghost. But something was sort of surreal about that whole setup. But it was so creepy. I mean, I just thought it did a really good job of being creepy in the first half.
See, I had trouble with it in the first half because did anyone see that really bad made-for-TV movie, The Boy in the Bubble, with John Travolta?
I was thinking about John Travolta,
too. That's all I could think about the whole time. I was like, oh, he's a boy in a bubble.
Me too.
And it's not the film's fault, but that association was there. So it took me a few minutes to get into this.
I'm grateful you said that, because I did struggle with that, too. I was thinking Boy in the Bubble. Absolutely. Oh my! And what's the doctor's real name, Lily? What's her name?
Lily Taylor.
Lily Taylor. Why can never
remember that? Dr. Horner?
Yeah, Dr. Horner. She did a good job in that film.
She's always good.
Up in a lot of stuff. Yeah, she's
always good.
Back to what? Mystic Pizza.
Yes.
Yes, them's the good old days.
That's a good
Mystic
movie.
Mystic Pizza.
I mean, I thought it was really cool. I love Mystic Pizza.
Do you really?
It's a young Julia Roberts.
Oh,
in that
so good.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of my favorite films.
Is it? You should go up and eat at the real Mystic Pizza.
I would love to.
I mean, the pizza's all right. I mean, it's all right. But it's still super cute. But anyway, I digress.
You know, it's interesting, like in The Exorcist, they go to psychiatrists and then eventually they have to go to the exorcist, you know, the priests.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of interesting here how Lily Taylor does both. I mean, you know, she's the doctor and you think she's applying medicine. And then, you know, suddenly she whips out her cross knife and whatever and is trying to stab him. And. Yeah, she becomes a sort of demon slayer or something in the end.
So
people didn't like this movie. It's got 48% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Did people like Prodigy more? That.
I think that's probably even lower.
Do you think
the husband knew that his son was evil?
He knew. I mean, we knew early on that it sounded like his wife had slept with someone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's like, what you did, blah, blah, blah.
You have no idea.
But I do think later on we get the reveal that the wife knew she was sleeping with the devil, and then her husband knew that she had slept with the devil.
Yeah.
I guess go hard or go home. I mean.
Oh, man.
Why does it always get quiet?
I can't imagine why.
So any last thoughts on either of these films? It sounds like I recommend both of them for sure, but Eli more so.
Yeah, I agree.
I would definitely recommend Eli. I would recommend The Prodigy I started with, 2017. That wasn't bad.
Yeah, Eli's definitely better, but I didn't hate either of them.
No, but I mean, if you look at the pantheon of evil kid horror movies.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that where these two would particularly stack up for me.
Yeah.
Just because I really do like the evil of the child to be centered and for it to be authentic, because I think that's the more complicated question.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I enjoy. Yeah. But it's just, you know, Friday night movie, get some pizza.
So in your pantheon, may I enter your pantheon right now?
You may.
What would be one or two of the better Evil Children films?
Well, we've referenced it, but I love The Good Son.
Yeah.
Because he is just horrible. And I love that he's dropping, you have this sweet face that we know from, the Home Alone movies. And he's dropping F-bombs here and there. And he's just so evil. And I think it's a really good, nuanced performance by a child actor. So I really do like that one. And then what else would I think for Evil Child?
Well, The Bad Seed for me. I love that from 1956, the original.
Oh, who's, oh gosh, what is it in the, it's with a horde of kids.
Oh,
Children of the Corn.
Oh,
Children Malachi. Of the Corn. Malachi. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Malachi for the win.
Where I work, you know, I work with a lot of kids, of course. And sometimes we get admissions and stuff like that. And I'll get an admission and I get like these Damians and Malachis. I'm like, did you not know when you named your kid?
Yeah. Malachi, I can kind of see from like biblical stuff.
Yeah,
but
I get that,
Damian?
Who would call their kid Damian?
I'm like,
I know a Damian. And every time I look, and he's such a sweet kid. But every time I look at him, I'm like, mm. I want to see how this shakes out in 20 years.
Yeah. I have to say The Omen is one of my favorite evil kid movies.
Yeah.
So how
good.
About you? Because
so,
you're
so
your specialty.
I know.
Best evil kid movies.
I think that one of mine is probably Joshua 2007, which is about to show up on Amazon Prime, I think.
Really?
Was it Prime? Yeah. I really like that one because he was definitely a bad kid. I did like Case 39, even though she's not necessarily inherently evil, but I think that they still have enough discussion about how people are bad.
Yeah.
I did love Orphan, but again, she wasn't necessarily a kid, but you don't know that till the end.
Yeah.
I didn't like Orphan.
I did. I can't lie. I did. I don't know. So, but yeah, Joshua is probably my favorite. Whisper is kind of similar to Joshua.
I've never seen Whisper.
That's another
What's that
2007
about?
Film. So it essentially, I think it even starts out, if I remember correctly, that the mother of the child hires a hit on her kid.
Is the kid a boy or a girl?
A boy. So
see,
most
that's
of,
interesting
that's
to me.
In a lot of these cases, it is a boy.
Right.
Unless you think of, what, The Ring, Orphan.
Oh, The Ring, of course.
Yeah, The Ring, yeah. Orphan, and then the Case 39.
The Bad Seed.
And then The Bad Seed.
And do you count The Exorcist as an evil kid movie?
Yeah, she's on the older end.
Should.
But yeah, definitely. So yeah, because she's probably becoming
And I wonder
menstrual.
If that's because younger girls are already threatening, quote unquote, that's why we see so many of the boys be the ones that
is it
are
easier to believe, though, because you think about young boys are just rammy, you know, rammy.
You no idea.
I'm glad
boys,
that you had that reaction too. I was like, is this a word? I don't know.
Like, I guess I don't know. Like, I just, you know, they
like
just
ram into one another.
No, they just do they just do crazy boy stuff like when they're young, so maybe it's a little
girls
bit easier
do crazy
to buy
stuff
in.
Like that too
they do, but I think maybe just as an audience it's easier to buy in. And if you think about just kind of movie audiences too, it's, you know, I don't know, is it still kind of teetering towards the male audience?
I don't know. I always thought that maybe it's because like we already like over sexualize young girls culturally, so there's a little bit of a lack of innocence. Perception-wise, I'm not saying that's the case, but perception-wise, there's a little bit of like a grayer area than there might be with boys, pre-adolescent
boys. That is interesting and sad.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
Well, I think that's it for this particular episode.
Yeah. I guess so. And we'll sit here. Okay.
That took a twist.
You know what I'll be thinking about tonight as I lay in bed? I don't know. I think I'm seeing images in my head from Sinister 2 now when the kid gets mowed by the truck.
Yeah. I love the Sinister films.
Yeah, I love Sinister. Wait, Sinister 1 or Sinister 2? Which do you like better?
I've never seen either.
Oh, no. We might have to do that just so Liz watches.
Sorry, ladies.
I'm going to have to say 1. But that's actually because I've seen it twice, and I think I've only seen Sinister 2 once, so I don't remember it.
Looks like you're outnumbered there.
I think it's on Netflix right now.
Oh, really?
I think Sinister 2 is on Netflix. Okay. Yeah, anytime you kill somebody by, like, putting a rat on their stomach and then, you know, covering the rat on there so it has to chew its way
that's
out.
That's right.
That's fantastic. Like on like
That's
top,
something
like,
to look forward top, to.
And that's like some... top 10 death scenes, like...
That's what we have to do. Is it
Absolutely.
Top 10 death scenes? I love
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. A rat burrowing its way through a body. Like, that's a horrible way to die. Unless you might think it's peaceful. I don't know.
It leaves an impression.
You'd probably be like, I love animals. I'm sure it would be soothing. As long as it was a certified therapy rat. Like, can't.
I think that's probably a better place to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Where I tried to wrap it up before. So I believe our next episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. Gwen doesn't know this yet, but she's
gonna get do. Ready, Gwen.
You were late today.
I was.
We were chatting about it earlier.
And you're going to the movies.
We're gonna do The Hunt because we've been excited about this.
The 13th, right?
13th of March.
Oh, I'd love to see theaters. That. I'm good with that.
It better not suck because I have hyped this movie up in my head.
Oh, it's totally gonna suck. But
I mean, if history is correct, yes, it will. But I'm
2020,
hopeful.
Shitty year for horror.
I think there was a review on IndieWire recently that, or there was, I read a pretty substantial review somewhere of it that said that it was good.
Oh, that's
like
good.
It was a believable review. Like I kind of thought, okay.
Did it give away twists?
No, it was pretty careful.
Oh,
about
that's good.
Not giving. Some stuff was given away, but not much.
I just want to go in completely blind and hope for the best.
Your eyes. But a bump. All right.
So that's it for today.
All right. I guess we could say bye.
Bye.